And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
I can feel the spirit building, soft as a whisper, but loud as a roar. I can feel something is stirring like I never have before. We've been quiet too long, my friends, but the working folk of this country will rise again.
Nelson Lichtenstein is a professor of history at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and is director of the Center for the Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy.
He's a labor historian who has written about the 20th century American political economy, including the automotive industry and Walmart. And Samantha Winslow, who is with us also, is a staff writer and organizer and co-director of Labor Notes magazine.
And of course, the best thing to say about Samantha is she's part of the Troublemaker Schools. And the mere name is just an absolute inspiration to me, because I was always labeled as a troublemaker, and I accept that willingly. And people like Samantha and Labor Notes have turned that into institutional. What do you call it?
The theme also is to put the movement back in the labor movement, which I think is very apropos to the discussion we're going to have.
Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Samantha?
Thanks
good.
For inviting us.
Now, the elementary thing to start out with, and then we'll get into the even more substantive part of where we go from here and how do we really begin to build workers' power in this era and beyond. Nelson, what can you tell us about how May Day was celebrated in California?
Well, there have been modest-sized demonstrations and marches on various sites of the University of California's little campuses and around. I think May Day, by the way, is becoming increasingly a holiday that adopted by the Spanish-speaking population of the country, and that's certainly been the case in the last decade in California. That they've been the ones who've been in the vanguard of reestablishing this holiday. Otherwise, I just have to say that I don't think we haven't had like things like the Day Without Immigrants, gigantic marches that we had 10 or so years ago.
Samantha, what about in Milwaukee?
A big rally in Madison at the Capitol, and there were thousands of people there, including teachers and immigrant rights activists fighting for the people's budget, more funding for public education, and demands including driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. And it was an exciting day, and especially exciting considering 8 years ago, I was at the same Capitol protesting Scott Walker and Act 10. So they got rid of Scott Walker. There's still a lot of work to do to undo the damage of Act 10, but a very exciting day.
So in Wisconsin, yeah, Scott Walker, boo, ick. Yeah, at least he, I don't know, Scott Walker, Trump, Scott Walker, Pence, Trump. Well, in any event, did get rid of Scott Walker, but how are things looking from your perspective as we are poised to begin the election season with the working class moving to the 2020 elections?
Well, I think a lot of damage has been done. The public sector unions have been decimated, and the funding for public schools and public services have definitely been very seriously cut, but there are bright spots. Several of the teachers' unions have stayed with a majority membership and are very active here in Milwaukee. The teachers and school employees have been fighting for higher pay and for a say in their working conditions, and they've had some wins under their belt. So I think the lesson is don't give up, and that when folks organize and fight back, they can actually win even in really difficult conditions.
Now, Nelson, you as an historian look on things in a longer perspective, and you try to figure out where we are today and the basis of what happened yesterday and many yesterdays. Now, in a recent article in Dissent, you talk about some of the developments in the labor movement, which to some extent seems counterintuitive, but are very interesting in terms of the role of the public sector unions, which everybody thought was going to be decimated after the Janus decision, Supreme Court decision, but that the private sector unions have not in any way moved at all. They've still been declining for the last 30, 40 years. So why don't you pick up from there in terms of what that means, what trends you see right now as a counter trend to that?
Well, the very first thing I want to say is a salute Labor Notes for 40 years of existence, and that's a terrific terrific thing. I remember it when it began, so I'm that old. So they've been certainly one of the institutions that's tried to keep the movement lively and forward looking. On the American labor movement in general, I would say this: that we have, on the one hand, there's no doubt that right now there's an upsurge of activism, both in public and private, and that's taking place right now in the country. Probably, in terms of, you know, statistics of strikes and things of that sort, clearly more than in 10, 20 years or so. That there's no doubt about that, and that's what that reflects about the moment. That's great, but one of the things that's so clear, and I think the right understands this in a way that maybe the left doesn't quite. The right understands that you have to institutionalize and create both institutions, whether they're unions or anything else, and laws, which will sort of capture that momentum, that mobilization that does take place, and will make it sort of permanent and encoded in law and in structures. And that's something that there was, I think, a piece by Tom Edsel in the New York Times today made that point, that the Democrats and other liberals of various sorts haven't understood the importance of the trade union movement as a kind of bearer of consciousness, of advanced consciousness, and that can't be divorced from the actual institutions that are there. And one of the things, of course, that Scott Walker, I mean, kind of in his own perverse way, understood was, you know, if we have to, if we eliminate these institutions, then, you know, the consciousness of workers will be difficult to sustain it and over the long run. And maybe it's one of the reasons the Midwest is now, you know, a battleground in many, many, many ways, but Midwestern states. So the long range is, I think, the whole purpose of the private sector labor law when it was put in effect 80 years ago, the Wagner Act, was to depoliticize industrial conflict, class conflict, to depoliticize it. Yes, we'll provide for the existence of trade unions, but there'll be private battles with private enterprises and get it out of the political realm. You know, we didn't want Europe. We didn't want general strikes. Well, today it's so clear that's impossible. That every industrial action, every teacher's protest, every activity, whether it's public, private, Lordstown, Volkswagen in Tennessee, you name it, it's all political. Everything is political. It's just what we used to call industrial relations, you know, or collective bargaining. These are all political. And I think this is, in one sense, is advantageous for the left. That is, that you can have local officials, and maybe even, you know, state, and maybe even presidential, who can, you know, advance the interests of labor. Clearly, we've seen the victories, the $15 an hour. We've seen other things of that sort. And so it's on the political realm where we can make progress. And I think that's what's happening. And as I say, the right understood that. They've understood that for 15, 20 years, and they've made all that progress in the state level. I think now the left has to begin to do that as well.
Well, are you saying that we can't make progress on the front of the labor contracts themselves, and therefore we have to turn?
They have been eviscerated. That is the Wagner era, the Wagner concept, the collective bargaining, one group of workers in one little factory and one little management. I mean, that has been virtually either impotent. If you win, if you organize the local McDonald's, 100% wall to wall wouldn't matter. The McDonald's has 10,000 of those. So once and meanwhile, of course, all the courts and the managerial law firms and whatnot have made it so difficult. So at this particular moment, until the law changes, it's virtually impossible to do that. You could have heroic struggles. Maybe they'll win at Volkswagen coming up. Maybe they'll be, you know, we could, and Labor Notes and other groups have pointed that out, and I think they're inspiring, but it hasn't. It's like beating your head against a brick wall when it comes to the kind of classic, collective bargaining or even sometimes organizing in the private sector. I think we have to change that. But right now, the political, the whether it's, you know, at the state, municipal level, passing laws. And by the way, it don't have to be $15. That's the only one. You can have things for all sorts of other things, whether it comes to free speech in the workplace, also gender, racial codes of conduct in the workplace, all sorts of other things you can do. It doesn't have to be just $15 or just, you know, what, just a wage thing. I think that's where we can make a lot of progress and make it a social movement. And I think that we're doing that.
Samantha Winslow, you know, I want to just take up some of the things that Nelson said, but I want to do it as follows. This, I went in and I work in a liberal-oriented social service, legal service kind of project with thousands of workers. And I sent out a May Day message. And I got several responses back that said, why in hell's name are you sending us these emails that have nothing to do with our work and are political? Wow, what an interesting bifurcation. So I was sending out Happy International Workers Day. So and this again is a liberal workplace site. So obviously for me in many ways it's the consciousness and the conscience of the working class, even more than the labor laws and so on, which I always expect to be somewhat punitive. So how have you, through your troublemaker schools, how have you sought to kind of rejuvenate, and what do you see in response to this and what Nelson is saying about the organizing of the working class for its own interests in this period of time?
Sure. And, you know, as Labor Notes just reported, it's hard to say that work isn't political when you have the governor of Tennessee doing a captive audience meeting with Volkswagen workers who are about to have a union election. So certainly, as Nelson pointed out, anti-union forces are using politics and are thinking about every possible way to go after unions. And so we also have to be talking about what is political in our work. But I would say that I think Nelson has, first of all, thank you for the kind words in support of Labor Notes. Nelson wrote a great article about our 40 years, which is, it's a very exciting time for us, even though things are very dire in the labor movement. We are seeing an outpouring of interest in our troublemaker schools, and we're seeing an outpouring of members looking for training, looking for answers on what to do to fight back. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that things are very dire, with the fact that Donald Trump is president. But I think there is a lot of potential. A few things that we try to emphasize and that we've said over the years is that workers need to build organization at their workplace, in their unions, and that can be that can help them fight back whatever comes their way. It can help them fight concessions. It builds power to think about politics and think about making bigger changes. And I think my big worry is, of course, we have to change the political landscape. We have to change the laws in our country. And there have been some really great ways to raise minimum wage and to create standards and improvements. But without that infrastructure, without that organization and members involved, it's very hard to enforce and it's very hard to sustain. So we really try to think about the building blocks. That is workers talking to each other about the issues that affect them and working collectively to change them. And I think it's in the public sector, nothing can exemplify that more than this bottom-up surge of teacher strikes that we've seen. So unions that, you know, 10 years ago were much more conservative. We're thinking about staying alive, keeping their heads down during tough economic times. Us rank and file teachers are stepping up and saying, we need to change. We need to fight for not just holding on to what we have, but to actually get more funding for our schools, more funding for our communities, and that this has been really popular. So we don't think that that would only apply to teachers in public schools. Teachers 10 years ago were branded as public enemy number one, but that when workers act together, when they advance issues that affect people very broadly, like living wages, that's a popular message and that can win.
And Samantha, in terms of the people who are you're face-to-face with in these troublemaker schools, I mean, you're a magazine also, but here you're face-to-face with people, and they've been growing across the country, and I know that your conventions also have been growing. Who are they? What kind of work are they from, and what are they most interested in?
Well, it's certainly a lot of teachers. There's no doubt that attacks on public sector workers and on teachers and public schools specifically have really motivated teachers to get together and figure out a plan to fight back. We also have nurses and transit workers coming to our conferences, healthcare workers. So it really is, and we work very hard to make sure we have a broad grouping of union members and activists, worker centers, hotel workers. So it's a diverse range that come to our conferences. We had 400 people at our New York and Bay Area Troublemaker School and 3,000 at our national conference in 2018. We're hoping for even bigger in 2020. But these are folks that are looking for training on how to talk to their coworkers, how to plan actions around workplace issues, around bullying bosses, and also thinking about bigger campaigns for funding, for a better contract. So people are really hungry for those nuts and bolts skills trainings. And then they're also looking for how can their unions fight for racial justice? How can their unions defend immigrant workers and communities? So we try to give a wide range of trainings and discussions around issues that are affecting working people today.
You know, Nelson, one of the things I commend you on that very important article and all the writing that you've done these many years, one of the things that has always been distressing, and I really speak more as a union member myself, a union member in what is a liberal, socially conscious unit of the UAW. And here we are. We do work every day around housing, immigration, criminal justice issues and the like. And yet our union remains absolutely static, you know, fermenting in, at best, kind of a modest effort towards bread and butter issues, and sees nothing about people holistically in terms of really labor and community and dealing with the person holistically, their sense of identity, race, ethnicity, gender, and the like. And I'm wondering to what extent you think that part of what's really stagnating the development and growth, aside from bad labor laws, of the private sector unions, how much of that has to be with the fact that, unlike really the unions of past, which were largely immigrant-led in their formation, are really somewhat, shall we say, chauvinistic or confined strictly to economist type of issues and don't do what some of the really exciting formation, like the Laundry Workers Center in New York, the Day Laborers Organization, which is to really take up the issues of the workers holistically.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's no doubt that unions, which are primarily immigrant, are often much more vital and activating, and mobilizing. In part because what they do is not just on bread and butter questions. It's really creating citizens. I mean, really making these people who, even if they're technically citizens or they're on their way, but making kind of participating in the full measure of what it means to be a rights-bearing person in the country, and immigrants do that. And historically the American trade union movement has been immigrant, and its greatest moments of advance have been immigrant, and that's why I'm ultimately hopeful. We have in California certainly, and everywhere we're reconstituting the working class in this country, and it's an immigrant working class, and you can see that every day. And I think, you know, as they infuse into the unions more than tradition or the law or the old leadership, you know, makes of it. I would like to say one thing more is, I mean, this is an old complaint of the left, but the fact is that with parties, and, you know, you can see, like, enthusiasm around Bernie or around some other figure, parties have a way of doing that, and the fact that I think the sort of the system is rigged, so we can't, you know, not to have a Labor Party or a third party, the left, it's really rigged in America in a way. But nevertheless, that has been one of the problems. So unions are kind of part of the thing is that they're expected in a way to do too much. That is to be social welfare institutions, to be with health insurance and pensions and this and that. These are things that really the state should do, or that a political party should be advancing. Now we do that, but the unions get saddled with it, and you end up with a big bureaucracy, and you end up with sort of just servicing the membership. So it's a continual problem in the United States. But every generation, every so often, there's a tremendous breakthrough. We had it with the civil rights movement. We've had it with the women's movement. I think we're on the verge of having that with the immigrant workers these days. Can I say one? I'm going to say one more thing here, and I'm going to say something which unexpectedly Joe Biden said, and it was good. I was quite floored by it.
So are we.
Here it is. He said this. It reminded me of a socialist leaflet from 1936. And I'll tell you what. So Biden was giving a sort of standard speech, and he said, you know, okay, you've had two years of Trump. You know, is your air any better? Is your taxes any lower? Are your wages any higher? And then he said something which is very unexpected. He said, does the boss like you any better, or has the boss stopped? No, it's even better. There, has the boss stopped, you know, ragging on you? And I thought, wow, you know, that, where did he get that idea? I mean, maybe he got it from hanging out with the unions for 30 years. It reminded me of a socialist leaflet from 1936, right after the election, the Roosevelt III election, which went like this: you voted New Deal at the ballot box, now get a New Deal in the shop. And I think it would be possible for some of these Democratic candidates are pretty good. Some are good. You know, they could link in an organic fashion their sort of social welfare progressive programs with this sense of the fight that's taking place inside the offices and the shops and things of that sort. And I think that would be, that's my proposal, but I'd like to see someone do that.
Samantha, we've got 2 minutes left, maybe 3 minutes. Labor notes, despite everything that's been said before, what else can we do to put the labor movement back in the labor movement? Here's Labor Notes talking.
Well, I think that the more we encourage rank-and-file activists to get together, talk to each other, start to think about how to build power, and we're seeing this happen in a lot of ways. The trauma of Trump being elected has kind of brought people out who want to do something, who want to get involved. So I think, you know, we've seen that at Labor Notes, and we want to really fan the flames and keep people feeling hopeful. But the more we can bring people together talking about taking action, whether they're in a union that is fighting hard and very active, or whether they're in a union that's kind of stuck in old way of doing things that's more conservative or inactive, I think people can make a lot of change by working together in their workplace, by, you know, building out from there. So I think you can also support Labor Notes. We're in our spring fundraising drive, so labornotes.org. Check out, we've got a promotion of a 40th anniversary t-shirt that you get if you donate. And Porting Labor Notes helps bring low-wage workers to conferences and to events. But I think that mostly we just want to empower workers to start working on this themselves. So they can come to Labor Notes events, and they can also get involved in their own organizations.
So now I'm going to get our historian, Nelson. Okay, I want you to conjure up one of the best flyers that you saw from May Day of old, which maybe we should send to Biden and good God, the rest of them, and take us out with one of the great sentiments of one of those fine May Day flyers, pamphlets, leaflets from the height of our organizing drives when, as Ken would say, we did have the labor movement and movement in the labor movement.
Well, the leaf that I now remember, and it's not.
I knew you would.
No, I know. I know. It was Frederick Douglass wrote it. It was right in the middle of the Civil War, and it was "Men of Color to Arms." Big poster. He was recruiting for the Union Army, and it was a revolutionary. It was a revolutionary poster. I mean, it was arming the those who had been oppressed. And what we need, is a poster to arms. That is the. I mean, it's metaphorical, and it has reality to it as well. And I think there is a revolutionary spirit, which is there, and we need to construct channels through which it can manifest itself. And I think that this is possible, and we see glimpses of it. So that's I'm not discouraged this season. I'm actually quite encouraged, and I think that the union movement it can have a tremendous resurgence. The institutional form it will take will not be the same as the old, but it can be there.
Oh, Nelson, I love it. I love that. And Samantha. So we've got the melding. We've got the wonderful professorial historian, activist in so many ways, Nelson Lichtenstein, who, you should look up his books. They're really important. He is a professor of history at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and the wonderful, and he applauds Labor Notes, as do we, and Samantha Winslow, staff writer and organizer and co-director of Labor Notes, applauds him as well she should. We give and pay homage to our elders in the best sense, who have brought us so much of the vibrancy of the past to inform the future. Love both of you, and we want to see a hell of a lot more troublemaker schools, and we want to see a hell of a lot more of us being troublemakers, tilting against the status quo to build workers' power, because workers of the world unite.
You have nothing to lose but your change, and you have a world to win.
And with people on our side like Nelson Lichtenstein and Samantha Winslow, we will make it so. Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
With my brothers and sisters, proudly we'll stand as the working folks of this country will rise again.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.